So first of all, Macron has been struggling during all of his five-year presidency with the question of laïcité. He's tried to delay a major speech on it, which he finally gave last year. And because he, even though he is more of a, you know, he's tempted by, you know, identity politics, and he is a real liberal in that sense, closer probably to the American models than the strict laïcité.
Liberal halvtime. En podcast fra tankesmien Civita.
Denne uken slippes en podcast med den franske tenkeren Patrick Chamorel om fransk sekularitet og litt om det franske presidentvalget. Episoden tatt opp før Russland gikk inn i Ukraina, og dermed så vil heller ikke det bli nevnt i episoden, og heller ikke tatt opp da i forbindelse med hva det betyr for det franske presidentvalget. Det har ikke noen stor betydning for innhold i podcasten for øvrig, men det greit å være oppmerksom på dette.
Welcome to Liberal Halvtime. My name is Mathilde Fasting, and today I'm joined by Patrick Chamorel, who is an editorial board member of American Purpose and a senior resident scholar and lecturer at Stanford in Washington, Stanford University. We are going to discuss the French term laïcité, its meaning, its history, and how it plays out today. We will also cover the forthcoming French presidential election. Patrick Chamorel writes regularly for the American Purpose, and listeners might look up his article on this subject there, and also, of course, on other subjects as well. Thanks for joining me today, Patrick.
You're welcome. I'm very pleased to be with you today. Thank you, Mathilde.
I will start by defining laïcité and trace the historical origins, and I'll let you come into it. But first, I will tell the listeners about what Tom Holland wrote in his book, because Tom Holland has also been a guest at the podcast, and he wrote that the investiture struggle in the 11th and 12th century brought about a key demand for reformers that Tom Holland wrote. And he said, namely, that the clergy distinguished themselves from the great mass of the Christian people, and then the name of those Christian people were called laicus or laity. And this means that historically, laicus was a description of the Christians in contrast to the people of the church. And some 600 years later, in 1842, the word laïcité appeared for the first time in French, signifying maybe, and we'll have a look at that, the English concept of secularism. So I will ask you, Patrick, and you're French, but you're living in the United States, how would you trace the laïcité and the term, and also the origins of secularism and religion and the church and the state? This is a big question, but it's important for us to understand, because in Norwegian we don't use the word laïcité, we would use the equivalent of secularism, so we need to get the concepts right.
Well, I'm going to try to explain this difficult, complex concept of laïcité. Interestingly enough, the main law that lays out laïcité, which was passed in 1905, doesn't contain a single time the word laïcité or even secularism. Yet it of course, covers laïcité. So laïcité is, of course, the French version of secularism, but it's even more than that. If you compare it with secularism, you discover very quickly that it's a different animal. And it is due to the very peculiar circumstances, historic circumstances of the development of secularism in France. So I will come back, of course, to the definition as I talk about the history, etc. But let's say the main aspect of laïcité consists in creating a public space, which means the state, politics, and education, not all education, but public education, which is devoid of the influence of religion. So unlike, you know, in many other countries, including in Norway, where For example, the head of state, you know, is also the head of the main religion. The same in Britain and in Germany, you know, you pay taxes to finance the religion. So there is no complete separation between state and church. In the United States, you have, which was the first to institute separation of church and state with, you know, the First Amendment of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. But there is not a complete separation, for example, of church and politics. You know, in American politics, of course, references to religion are everywhere. So there are different models, you know, like, again, in Northern Europe or in the United States, democracy didn't need to develop, you know, after creating a break with religion, because religion had not been what it has been in France. So what's specific about French history and what explains laïcité is two things. First of all, the fact that the Catholic Church was dominant, and it has been dominant for centuries and centuries, let's say the Middle Ages and until, let's say, the end of the 19th century, even into the first half of the first of the 20th century. And second, it has been dominant, but it has been allied with the monarchy, very closely allied, and including the absolute monarchy of Louis XIV and some other Louis. So basically, in order to institute, to establish democracy in France, you know, you could not do it unless you broke with religion. Because the monarchy resisted, of course, democracy, but it was allied with religion. And therefore, you know, this is, you know, the credentials of religion basically were very, very absolutist, if you want. So if you, you know, I can go back maybe in history if you're interested, you know, just an overview. It seems that the beginning of laïcité, the beginning of this separation, growing separation between civilian power and state power, which was the monarchy on one hand and the Catholic Church on the other, was the War of Religions. So that is the 16th century. This is François I and Henry IV. And how do you solve that conflict? And the way it was solved was through Henry IV to convert himself from Protestantism to Catholicism, saying, you know, Paris is well worth a mass, you know. And that gave him lots of leverage over the Catholics because he has converted into Catholicism. And that's how he could try to influence the Catholic Church and say, you need to be tolerant vis-a-vis the Protestants. And therefore, you know, it is because, you know, temporal power grew in importance that it could detach itself from religion. So this is a paradox, of course, you know, because you would say, well, you know, you have a very strong, you know, political power represented by a king, etc. That's not, of course, we're not, you know, even approaching democracy. But what matters is that secular power has some influence over religion. And so in the War of Religion, the thinking was that you won't be able to solve the problem between Protestants and Catholics if you talk about precisely theology, for example, because nobody is right over the other. So you need, you know, to create, you know, some space for, you know, political power that is devoid of religion. And of course, you know, And then, of course, you try to call for more tolerance between the religions. But you're not, you know, the political power is not hostage, if you want, to religions. It tries to control it a little bit. And that was the period of, so the Edict of Nantes, you know, which gave some freedom to the Protestants through Henri IV. Unfortunately, less than a century later, under Louis XIV, you know, was revoked. Mm. And so we went back to more intolerance vis-à-vis the Protestants, but the secular power kept growing. And therefore, you know, the king was able to detach itself a little bit from the Catholic Church. So that was one period, and we can talk about, you know, of course, the revolution was key, but we...
Yes, I think the picture that's kind of growing here is that because the special position that the Catholic Church had in France, it became... It was the country where this division became most urgent to do something about, because in other countries, of course, the church would be powerful, but not as powerful as the French Catholic Church. And as you say, leading up after the French Revolution and then through the 19th century, it finally came to the year of 1905, where you have a law coming. And you also said in the beginning that it doesn't mention the word laïcité, but it mentioned probably other things. So very shortly, what happened between the revolution, the French Revolution, and about a little bit more than 100 years, 120 years, until 1905? And then what is the main contents of this law from 1905, and how did it come about?
So the revolution, of course, was key. That's a big difference with any other democracy today. And the revolution was very anti-clerical, as we all know. But made political power no longer resting, at least inspired by religion. So that was basically, it instituted, you know, the laic power. The state and religion became more separate, and the clergy, for example, had to be regimented by. Well, first of all, lost lots of its estate and its power, and the clergy was considered more, you know, citizens than really members of a church. So, of course, that didn't please the Catholic Church. Napoleon then, at the end of the revolution, tried to reconcile, you know, the two sides, you know, the revolutionary side and the counter-revolutionary side, which is more Catholic. And he created what's called the Concordat, which is a covenant. Unlike the law of 1905, it's a covenant. And in which basically the Gallicalism, which was, you know, the regime under the monarchy, Gallicalism is very interesting because basically it said that the power of the monarchy rests with the religion and the king is the representative of God in France. So Gallicalism means you separate yourself from Rome, from the Catholic Church in Rome, because the representative of the church is not the Pope, it is the king. So you cannot, have political power in Paris and religious power in Rome. They are both in Paris. So that stopped with Napoleon. We had to make some concessions to the Catholics. And so he renews, you know, contacts with the Pope. But it's still a regime where politics, you know, controls the church, meaning that, you know, the state appoints, you know, the bishops, etc. You have a kind of a resurgence of Catholic power, of course, during the restoration of the monarchy, you know, in the in the first half of the 19th century. But overall, the 19th century shows a struggle between the forces that are pro-democracy and the counter-revolutionary and Catholic forces. And the last, and during Napoleon III, you know, which is, I don't know if we all can follow all of this, but Napoleon III is basically 1848 or 1854 for when he becomes emperor, and 1870. So that's a return to also religion, and you know, which is much closer to the political power. But then there is a big break because France embraces the Republic in 1870. And this means that the folks who have been pro-democracy have won. Now, it's not until a few decades later that you have full, you know, political freedom. And it's not until, and you have like a freedom of association, of unions, of education in 1880, you know, but it's not until 1905 that this law about laïcité happens, and it really shows that the pro-democracy forces have won, if you want to simplify things, they have won over the Catholic forces. So the Catholics, you know, are not very happy about it, but they accept it, you know, and it says first of all that. It established your freedom of conscience. That means, of course, you can and you can choose your religion, you can change religion, you can believe in the God you want, practice the religion you want. Of course, freedom of religion. So every cult is, of course, allowed. And the state doesn't finance any religion. Is neutral towards religion, so you can, you know, choose your religion. The state is not behind one religion more than others. So it's really a very big break with the past. Now, so what's kind of you know, interesting about that law is that in order to make sure that the state, politics, and public education is devoid of religious influence. For example, civil servants are not able to show their religion. They're not able to express it, you know, through clothes or through discourse, etc. They can't. It's very important that public teachers, for example, or teachers in public education, don't do that. Education was really a main goal of the pro-laic forces, which were basically the left. Mm. And we'll come to this. But so that is, of course, very weird for most, you know, when you're outside of France, you know, to say that the civil servants cannot, you know, wear signs of religion. You know, this is kind of understood as a suppression of religious freedom. Mm. But in France, it's a condition to freedom, because you cannot be free if you're under the influence of a religion. I mean, you can choose to be religious in private life, you know, in society, etc. But and again, churches are completely free in that domain. But you cannot let politics, the state, and public education be influenced by religion. This is, for the French, it's regressive. The French want to emancipate the citizen, as opposed to the individual, but the citizen from those influences, which are considered like obscurantist, and elevate the citizen above all of this. Mm. This is your reason above superstition. So this is the idea, and it is true that since the law of 1905, you know, there's been a growing consensus in France around laïcité. Even, you know, the Catholics, they kind of and the non-Catholics, you know, they kind of were together in the trenches of World War One, and they became like one people, not separated by this issue anymore. And they actually, the Pope rallied himself to the French Republic in 1924. Laïcité has been not just the law of the land, but the culture, the political culture of the land, and it has been the cement, you know, around which the French can unite. It's absolutely the heart of the political culture. It's very just as important of that as freedom of religion in America. So those notions are absolutely key in the development of American democracy on one hand and French democracy on the other. Of course, there are differences between the two, and I'm ready to talk about that.
Yes, we can just have a look at what you wrote in your article in American Purpose, because you wrote the following of a recent book about laïcité and two leading public intellectuals, one called Philippe Reynaud and the other one Laurent Bouvet, offer us a rich and stimulating book you wrote and helps us to understand why laïcité, the heart of the French conception of, as you mentioned, citizenry, along universalism and assimilation of immigrants, has today, what you say here in your article, come to be the subject of a highly contentious, divisive, and consequential national debate. So first, what are the arguments that are presented in this book that you wrote about in American Purpose? And then this book, or these things that you wrote about, are of course recent developments and long after 1905. So shortly, what has happened here and why do you use words as divisive, consequential national debate and so forth?
So laïcité applied to Catholicism. It then also applied to Judaism and Protestantism. And the Jews and the Protestants were actually very fond of laïcité because, you know, it kind of shrunk the domination of the Catholic Church. And it made them also more autonomous from the state, you know, because what the Church lost in power, it gained in autonomy with the laïcité law. But it didn't apply to Islam because, you know, the Muslims were in the colonies and the French understood that, you know, they were not even citizens. And the French understood that it was not the way to go because, and the Muslims didn't want it either. They thought it was a European thing and it didn't apply to them. What happened is that at the very time when laïcité has triumphed, you know, that all political forces in France, you know, had rallied laïcité, even the right, you know, even though it started on the left, the right had rallied it. So it was a real consensus. At that very moment of triumph with laïcité as it was construed, that is only against vis-à-vis the Catholic Church, it is being questioned again. This time it's not Catholicism, but it's Islam. So why is Islam, of course, has great difficulties with laïcité. First of all, you know, Islam is goes even beyond religion. It's trying to organize, you know, private lives. And so there is an aspect of Islam which is obviously goes very deep into not, you know, people's private life, but also as a role, Islam as a role in politics, in the state, etc. So this kind of a neutral area, you know, for politics and state and education is not understandable and not admissible by Islam. Plus, Islam doesn't really apply, not individual Muslims, but Islam as a religion, doesn't really apply freedom of conscience. For example, if you take, you know, they think blasphemy, for example, is, of course, not allowed at all. Or apostasy, which is basically you cannot change your religion. So this is basically, we would call it today an illiberal religion. And it's even truer today because when other religions have become more secularized and Islam actually has become more radicalized in the last few decades. And, you know, so it's not just, you know, laicity is not really troubled by the, is not concerned by theology. It's only concerned with, by, you know, the political aspect of the religion. You know, it's social and political consequences. And Islam is asking for more of a role in the public sphere than laïcité would allow. Mm. So it's not really a surprise that you know, Islam refuses laïcité, and many Muslims in France, you know, they respect Islam and they apply it to their own lives and their own beliefs, but not all. Actually, a majority won't, you know, considered, you know, are opposed to laïcité. And they are therefore opposed to the law of 1905 that they want to change, and the two laws that have been taken more recently, which is we talked about, you know, teachers not being able to wear like religious mm-hmm. signs, but now students in public schools cannot do that either. Not very conspicuous religious signs. And it applies to all religions, of course. And second, you know, so that was in 2004, and 2010, you know, the burqa was banned in the public's sphere.
Fair, yes.
So, but it was not on the ground of laïcité. It was on the ground of public order. So all of this started, you know, the new debate really started when in 1989,
yeah, you
know, the Salman Rushdie girls in northern France, yeah, you know, came to school with their hijab. Mm. And were said by the teachers and the intendant, they said, no, you cannot do that. And it was actually so there was no jurisprudence on this, but it's a you know, but it was very shocking culturally. Again, laïcité is the law, so it's a bunch of rules, but it's mostly a political culture and a political, almost an anthropological project, and that shocked, of course, many people. That in the public education, which is supposed to train citizens, you know, that they would refuse a basic rule of French citizenship, which is, you know, don't let religion in the public sphere. And so, of course, so that, you know, the battlefield got organized then and is still with us today. Mm. You know, so on one hand, you have the left, which used to be the most pro-laïc camp, you know, because probably they have this kind of guilt about colonization and about, you know, immigrants being oppressed, etc. They sided, I mean, not all of the left, but a big chunk of the left, with, you know, the, you know, expression of religious identity, even though they were always the most anti-religious when it came to Catholicism. Now they, but they think that the laïcité law doesn't apply to and it's true in formally it doesn't apply to Islam, and then on the other side you have folks who say that you know this is not acceptable. So the new politics of laïcité as in, you know, this has intensified since then, and there is no solution in sight, of course, because again, most Muslims and Islam as a religion, they don't believe that laïcité is a legitimate way, you know, to organize relations between the state and religion.
Hmm. So if we say you have actually covered, as you said 1989 that marked a beginning of conflicts between Muslims and this concept of laïcité. And I found out that that was the year when Salman Rushdie's fatwa came, and that was coinciding with those girls with hijabs. And then you also have following, of course, there's been terrorist attacks and there's been things going on in France ever since. And then the last one that came about was the beheading of a teacher, Samuel Paty, in 2020, I think it was. And there was a secularism bill that came about the year after. So let's have a look at the recent developments. And also, as you started out with saying that the sympathy of laïcité was on the left side of French politics, but now we will see that the right side of the politics and maybe populism also on the far right are maybe also now coming into the discussions about Islam, of course, but also the concept of laïcité. So I think that you also have commented a book which is La Nouvelle Question Laïque, the new question about laïcité and secularism question. So you have read that, and it's interesting what you also said about that. So take us into, because we know it's the French elections soon for presidential elections, and it would be okay to have a picture of what's happening in all these camps, political camps, and what they stand for and how they argue, and how much you think that laïcité now influence French politics.
Well, that's another big question.
Big question. We'll take them from time to time, but anyway,
we'll try to sort it out. You know, what's happened really is a political reversal, you know, between the left and the right, now you know, Islam is considered like the you know, is considered the religion of the oppressed. So it has kind of replaced, for the left or the far left, it has kind of replaced the working class, and so the politics, the left, which was very secular, you know, has now embraced, you know, identity, not just the class struggle, and in that sense, you know, this alliance between, you know, pro-Islam forces and not pro-Islam as a religion. I mean, the political movement, you know, so, and especially, you know, what's called political Islam, or sometimes or otherwise called Islamism, and as kind of found an ally with the left, because the left believes in identity, etc. And so that's what's giving so much influence. So Samuel Paty. So that's the teacher was beheaded because he showed the caricature of Mahomet in his class, but only to explain to his students, you know, it was a class on freedom of expression. And he said, you know, those who don't want to see that, you know, they can leave class. But, you know, anyway, he was denounced by, you know, one of the students and on actually factual misinformation. And he was beheaded by an Islamist. So that shocked the country tremendously. Interestingly enough, it didn't really shock. I don't know, but it was interpreted differently, let's say, by in the United States, for example, or in countries that have. And do criticize laïcité as a suppression of religious freedom, and saying basically that laïcité is the reason why is one reason behind encourages terrorism, which is extreme and completely, I think, completely false. But so Samuel Paty is yes, was unfortunately, you know, he was a teacher, therefore, and it was really like an attack on at the heart of a French institution that is supposed to enforce the laïcité. But the notion of blasphemy and of you know, freedom of religion freedom of expression against religion, that's a very French thing. You know, you can satire, you can criticize religion, any religion. Not of course discriminate against Muslim or any people for their religious beliefs, but you can criticize religion. You know, it's not like in the United States, when you invoke religion, you can get an exemption. You know, for example, well, you know, I don't want to sell a cake to a gay couple, you know, the famous legal case, and you know, because of my religion. Or I don't want to rent out my place to a gay couple because of my religion says no. So these kind of things, you know, that puts sometimes religion seemingly, you know, above civil law, is really, you know, not misunderstood in France too. So there is this kind of mutual misunderstandings, you know, where many Americans and people in Europe, especially Northern Europe, where you are, you know, said, well, you know, this is really an attack on what Charlie Hebdo caricature is really an attack on Islam. And even though Charlie Hebdo attacked, you know, Catholicism and Christianity much more than Islam, it's not considered, you know, proper. So there is kind of a reticence to criticize religion. Not in France, it's true. So Samuel Paty was another round of, you know, started another round of misunderstanding between France and, you know, countries like the United States or in Northern Europe who understand secularism in a more liberal way. Mm-hmm. So you have the Islam against laïcité in general, and many Muslims behind, you know, against laïcité. You have the left, and then you have the liberals of, you know, other democratic nations that tend to be against, you know, laïcité. So laïcité is a kind of a French exception, and considered in many other countries as retrograde and archaic, when for the French is on the contrary, it is there to keep people free and equal vis-à-vis religion. You know, so everybody is equal in the sense that, you know, no privilege is given to one religion or another. And so through, you know, in France, you know, we care about freedom from religion as much as freedom of religion.
Yes.
And this is what makes laïcité very distinctive from other forms of secularism. Mm-hmm. So we can get to the presidential election if you want.
Yes, because I think we need to just get a picture of what is going on the far right when it comes to these questions before we get mm-hmm. into the presidential elections. But the position of the far right when it comes to the ideas of laïcité and also of how this spells out in those parties. I mean, Marine Le Pen, Éric Zemmour, others.
Okay, so the far right, you know, usually was the place where, or the right in general, where Catholics were welcome and supported those political forces. But Marine Le Pen has, there's still, you know, some fundamentalist Catholics, you know, on the far right, but they are, of course, a dwindling, you know, community. And Marine Le Pen, instead of just supporting, you know, the Catholics, said, well, I'm going to support democracy. I'm going to support, you know, communities that are actually sometimes exposed to terrorism more than others, like, you know, Jews or like gays, etc. And therefore, you know, she's like the shield, the new shield of democracy against the so-called assault, you know, from a very proselytizing is yeah. that the word religion and seemingly aggressive religion. So yes, now the right is the bastion of laïcité. I mean, so the defenders of laïcité go from the far right all the way to, let's say, the center left. And left of that is people who are more, you know, supporting identity politics, multiculturalism, and some form of Islamism. Mm.
Because we are talking now in February, and this will probably be sent for the listeners in March sometime. But it's before the presidential elections forthcoming in France, and just shortly the picture of how it looks today. And of course, with the we have to say to the listeners that things might change until you hear this. But anyway, the big picture of politics today, and also how this laïcité and these questions, Islamism, everything comes into this picture, and how important it is for the French elections to understand this.
So first of all, Macron has been struggling during all of his five-year presidency with the question of laïcité. He's tried to delay a major speech on it, which he finally gave last year. And because he, even though he... he's more of a, you know, he's tempted by, you know, identity politics, and he is a real liberal in that sense, closer probably to the American models than the strict laïcité. So he didn't really realize the problems that were, you know, taking place, you know, in major cities and in now, of course, all over France, you know, with many Muslim groups, you know, asking for privileges, you know, like going, like women should only be seen by women doctors in hospitals, or, you know, the street prayers that happened like this, you know, without any heads up, etc. So there are many signs, you know, that Islam is getting more active into the public sphere, and for Macron it was a very difficult thing to understand. So Macron is obviously leading the you know, in the polls for the first round of election. Never forget that there are two rounds of elections, you know, mm-hmm. with the runoff hitting yeah. you know, the top two vote getters of the first round. So Macron is like ahead, at least 10 points ahead of the number two, who is a center-right woman called Valérie Pécresse. So and then you have like two people considered, let's say, on the far right. Marine Le Pen is one, and Éric Zemmour is another one. So basically, the far right, you know, has now two versions. You know, one which is the populist, the nationalist one, which is Marine Le Pen, which has a very strong, you know, working class, lower middle class base in the electorate, and, you know, fairly statist economic policies. And then you have Zemmour, who is liberal in economics, you know, is for free market, etc., against Europe too, but free market and very much concentrate his discourse on Islam, you know, gaining ground in France. So it's interesting that the three main contenders besides Macron are to his right. The left yeah. is extremely weak. It is at a low ebb historically of around 25%, and it is divided, deeply divided, with several candidates and several types of ideology. So the right today has never been as strong, and the far right too. So Zemmour is the only one. I mean, he's trying to build a bridge between the right and the far right. But of course, you know, there are resistance on both sides, especially on the center right. The bottom line is that the favorite to well, Marine Le Pen and Valérie Pécresse are really very, very close as number two. So either can get to the runoff. If it's Marine Le Pen, I think she has very little chance, almost no chance to win against Macron in the runoff, because like the last time where she was beaten very, very severely, she doesn't have any allies. If it's Valérie Pécresse, she has a chance. So I think that, you know, the president, next president will, you know, probably the favorite is still Macron. But the only one who can possibly beat him is Valérie Pécresse of the center-right. Hmm. But yes, these issues have become the most prominent in French politics: immigration, Islam, the question of French identity, which, of course, where laïcité is at the very heart of that French political identity. Those questions are absolutely key, even though if you ask people, you know, they will say, oh, economic issues are very, very important. But what really splits people between all of these political force, you know, competing in the presidential election is immigration, is Islam. This is why actually the right and the far right are so important, is because they consider that Macron has not done enough. And crime, has been rising in France for many, many years, even decades. So those are, you know, the issues that where the right and the far right are best equipped with.
So I think I'll have to invite you back either on a webinar or on the podcast to comment on the results of the French elections. We'll have to see what they are. But anyway, to finalize this podcast on laïcité, what do you think will become of the concept of laïcité in the future? Do you think it will be weakened, or do you think it will become stronger?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. so far, if you want, the laïcité has been understood by the courts and by European institutions or international institutions more and more in a liberal way. So even the laïcité, you know, has lost some of its influence, at least the strict laïcité of the 1905 law. First of all, because the two, protagonists around that law where the Catholic Church and the state and both have lost steam. And so we are and the young generation now embraces a more liberal idea of laïcité where, you know, religions have more of a role in the public realm. So in that sense, you know, I think there is an evolution that will continue. The question again is, to what extent can Islam and the Muslim community adhere to even a more liberal form of Islam of laïcité? Does laïcité has to actually disappear, you know, to accommodate them? Probably not, because it's still a very, very central concept in French political culture, but one wonders how Islam can adjust to it, so that's, I think, a major issue that is going to be with us for many decades to come. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what can I say? I have to say thank you, merci beaucoup, for joining the podcast from Washington.
And thank you very much, Mathilde. It was a pleasure.
We'll come to contact you again when we see the results of the French elections. And for the listeners to the podcast, just tune in. And if you like us, rate us and recommend us and give us feedback by using Mathilde@civita.no or Eric@civita.no. And information about what we might do, for instance, about the French elections, have a look at Civita's homepage, thecivita.no, and you'll find information. So thanks for listening and welcome back.
Liberal halvtime. En podcast fra tankesmien Civita.
Moderne medier.